The next case on our call this morning is number 06-2387, Fonseca-Sanchez against Gonzalez. Mr. Heron.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the Court, my name is Jeffrey Heron, and I represent America Fonseca-Sanchez. America Fonseca-Sanchez lived in the United States for nearly 30 years, from the age of 8 until last year when she was deported. She was deported through an expedited removal process for people who are not lawful permanent residents and who have an aggravated felony conviction. Now, expedited removal is a very quick process. An Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer gives the respondent a notice saying that they have 10 days to raise any and all defenses to removal, otherwise they will be deported. In Ms. Fonseca-Sanchez's case, her aggravated felony was shoplifting. She had shoplifted because she was homeless. She said that she was homeless because her husband, her common-law husband, had repeatedly beaten her over the course of several years. He had thrown her through a glass window. He beat her so badly on her face that she needed stitches in her lip. And when she eventually separated from him, she was living in her car with her four United States citizen children. And that's why she shoplifted, she said, in order to clothe her children. Now, before Ms. Sanchez was deported, but after she was issued a removal order, she requested a U visa. The U visa is a special visa that Congress has created for crime victims. It was created in 2000, but to date there's still no formal application process, nor have regulations been issued. Instead, there's an interim process for applying for interim relief. It has a twofold purpose, first to protect immigrant crime victims, and second to aid law enforcement by allowing people who have useful information about a crime to stay in the United States. Now, Ms. Sanchez had said that she was eligible for the U visa because she had helped the state prosecute her common law husband on three occasions for domestic battery. The government, however, denied her request because the government took the position that people with aggravated felony convictions or final orders of removal are not eligible for a U visa. In her opening brief to this court, Ms. Sanchez argued that that position is ultra vires. The statute nowhere says that people with aggravated felony convictions or final removal orders are ineligible for a U visa. To the contrary, it has a very broad waiver provision, which would seem to waive virtually any ground of inadmissibility whatsoever.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think there are any limits on how long after the final order issues that a person can ask for other relief?
Our position is that Ms. Sanchez could have asked for relief at any point up until her actual removal. There's a process which is set forth in the different memos, which actually says that when somebody's applied for a U visa, the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Customs Services, through their Vermont Service Center, is supposed to consult with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. And at that point, Vermont is supposed to make a decision about whether or not to grant somebody relief. If they are granted relief, then their removal can be stayed. I would also point to the analogous T visa, which is a visa that was created through the exact same piece of legislation as the U visa for the benefit of trafficking victims. And unlike the U visa, there are regulations in place for the T visa, which allow somebody with a final removal order to request a stay of removal and stay in the United States while their application is adjudicated.
Does the U visa actually exist, though, without these regs?
We're not aware of anybody actually being granted a U visa. However, what people are given is something called deferred action. It's a form of interim status, which basically the government is saying, we're not going to deport you at this point in time because you've set out a prima facie case that you're eligible for this visa. Instead, you can stay here, and then when we finally get around at the end of the day to issuing our regulations, creating an application form and whatnot, you can apply, and then we'll make the determination as to whether to give you the U visa or not. So our position is just that Ms. Sanchez should be allowed to request that interim relief because she has made out a prima facie case that she is eligible for a U visa.
And, of course, that's independent and separate from the order of removal. And they say that because she's been ordered to remove before this was initiated, and also because she has this aggravated felony, that and that there aren't any regulations, that this that's just it's separate in the where is she now? She's back in Mexico, isn't she?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, so she's already out. So this is sort of a hindsight thing without any regulations to even implement it. What could she, now that she's back in Mexico, these other things they suggest are usually things that are available when you don't have some order of removal, isn't it?
No, Your Honor. Again, the T visa, with due respect, there are a variety of different kinds of relief, including the T visa that you can get in the immigration context, even if you have a final order of removal.
Because they do have regulations for that, though, right?
Correct.
And, I mean, there's ways to implement it. It's actually in gear, kind of, where this one is not, which is unfortunate, but that's the fact.
And it's also a violation of the Administrative Procedures Act, is our contention.
Yeah, that's where they say you got to go for the APA for that.
Well, our position is that this court has jurisdiction under the APA to evaluate whether the agency's actions are arbitrary and capricious. There's nothing saying that we can't bring an APA action here. The government's contention is that we can't. They have, I think if you look to the APA, you'll see that it provides that jurisdiction lies wherever the statute at issue says there is jurisdiction. So in this case, the statute at issue is the Immigration Act, which says that the petition for review is the exclusive process for review. Therefore, this court has jurisdiction over a variety of claims, constitutional claims, legal claims that the statute is ultra vires, or that the implementation of the statute is ultra vires, or claims that the agency's actions are arbitrary and capricious in violation of the Administrative Procedures Act. Just to get back to some of these jurisdictional issues, I think you were alluding to this, Your Honor. You mentioned that the U visa application is outside the ordinary removal process, and that poses a problem here. First of all, I want to just address the issue that she's outside the country, which you had mentioned. This court now has jurisdiction over petitions for review where people have actually been removed and are outside the United States. The statute was amended in 1996 to give this court jurisdiction in cases like that. Secondly, there is the possibility that she could be granted relief, which would allow her to come back into the United States. The very memos issued by the Department of Homeland Security refer to parole as one means of effectuating the U visa.
So where are her children now? She's got children of varying ages.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are they still here? They're citizens, of course.
Our understanding is that her children are actually in Mexico with Ms. Fonseca Sanchez, and that they're living on the border, and that they, as United States citizens, may be crossing the border to attend school in the United States.
Well, one of them was a fair amount older. In fact, didn't I see a letter to her in prison that she's going to get married or something?
I believe so, Judge. Yes, I believe one is over 18.
Yeah.
So just to get back to this issue about the U visa application process being outside the ordinary removal process, the government cites a case in its brief called Cheng Fan Kwok, which is a 1968 Supreme Court decision, which says courts don't have jurisdiction over cases like this in the context of a petition for review. Now, the immigration statute is radically different today than it was in 1968. It's a different statute entirely. And this court now has jurisdiction over a variety of different kinds of issues that relate to removal order but are not actually raised within the removal process itself. Again, I want to stress that this is an extremely truncated process, this expedited removal. Ms. Sanchez had 10 days to raise any issues before the Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer. She was incarcerated at the time. She didn't have postage. She didn't have envelopes. She didn't have an attorney. There was no way that she could have even possibly known that this U visa existed. And therefore, we shouldn't reasonably expect her to have exhausted her administrative remedies by raising this issue, as the government contends. And furthermore, it is not reasonable to expect that she'll have raised every single issue within the context within that 10-day window. And furthermore, I mentioned the statute has changed since 1968 when Cheng Fan Kwok was decided. In addition to that, Ms. Sanchez's case is factually distinguishable, because unlike the petitioner in Cheng Fan Kwok, who didn't file a petition for review of his removal order, instead he waited, filed an application for adjustment of status, and then sought a stay of removal based on that application, and then appealed the denial of that stay. Ms. Sanchez's situation is very different. She did file a petition for review within 30 days, and she's trying to review this removal order. That is the main thing that is at issue for this court, is the validity of her removal order. And so that's a factual distinction between Cheng Fan Kwok and our case. Now, the government also contends that this court lacks jurisdiction because of Section 242G of the Immigration Act, which is a provision that bars this court from considering the discretionary decisions of the government to commence proceedings against somebody, to adjudicate cases, or to execute removal orders. Now, Ms. Sanchez just isn't challenging any of those things. Again, she's challenging her removal order itself and not any of these discretionary decisions. And she's raising an argument of law as opposed to a challenge to the government's discretion. Just to briefly address some of my issues on the merits, if I may.
You're in your rebuttal time, so
yes,
you may want to take that into consideration.
I think that I'll reserve my rebuttal time then. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Herron. We'll hear now from Mr. Mack.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Greg Mack, counsel for the respondent, the Attorney General of the United States. The Court should dismiss the petition for review for lack of jurisdiction for two reasons. First, faced with a notice of intent to remove her, petitioner said absolutely nothing, raised no objection to the proposal to remove her, let alone raised an issue with respect to the U visa. Secondly, the claims raised in the instant petition do not involve or otherwise touch and concern the final administrative order of removal. Let there be no doubt, the petitioner does not dispute that she is removable from the United States. What she's saying is there's an opportunity for her to remain in the United States. However, those claims were raised after the final order of removal was issued against her. This is really a question of admission to the United States and not one about the removability of the petitioner. Now, certainly the court has jurisdiction to review the expedited order of removal, but it can only review those things that touch and concern or are intimately associated with that final administrative order of removal. The administrative officer who issued the final administrative order here had no knowledge with respect to the U visa claim because there was no objection raised to the proposal to remove her. So we would again urge the court to dismiss this case for two reasons. The failure.
Well, was she represented by counsel at that time?
At the time that the notice of intent was issued against her, there's no indication of that in the record, Your Honor. But
and was she in custody? She was out at that point, right?
I believe she was in custody at the time that the notice of intent was issued against her.
So she was in custody. Is there any dispute with respect to her ability to contact, you know, mailage, postage, no counsel? You know, so in terms of her knowledge that this U visa opportunity was available or that she could object, was there any indication that she was aware of that?
Well, there's no indication in the record from the petitioners, I believe, that as to what access she had or did not have to counsel or to a law library or other issues with respect to the notice of intent to remove. But a hallmark of bringing cases to this court challenging agency action is that there's some dispute raised before the administrative officer, before the administrative officer takes action. Exhaustion is a sine qua non of our administrative review process for the court to review claims that a petitioner has about the agency action. Those issues, the claim must first be exhausted through that administrative officer so the administrative officer knows if there's an issue with respect to the proposal, in this case, to remove the individual. There's absolutely no response to the notice of intent to remove issued by the administrative officer here.
Well, why should a person be required to submit a U visa request to the ICE when you said the ICE couldn't issue U visas? In other words, if the petitioner had responded to a final order of removal in a timely manner with a request for a U visa, was there some mechanism in place for ICE to direct such request to CIS?
There could have been a different prosecutorial choice made by ICE in this case. ICE could have taken many different prosecutorial choices in this case, but faced with nothing from the petitioner in this case, the administrative officer issued the final administrative removal order. The hallmark of the exhaustion requirement is that it illuminates issues for the deciding officer to resolve before the final order is issued. So that there might not be an actual mechanism for ICE to take any action, ICE could have consulted with CIS or decided to place the individual in what's called 240 proceedings or proceedings before an immigration judge and have those proceedings walk along the process. But here, faced with nothing from the petitioner before the administrative order was issued, there's nothing that was before the administrative officer with respect to any objection, claim, or U visa in this regard. And so, again, we would urge the court to dismiss the claim on the first issue that the government has raised, that there was a failure to exhaust administrative remedies. With respect to the Ching Fang Kwok case, and we also had cited this court's case in Carvajal-Munoz, when the alien is challenging a final order of removal, the issues that are raised before this court must touch and concern and be intimately associated with that final administrative order before this court can review the administrative order of removal. The U visa claim, again, was issued was raised after the administrative order was issued by the ICE officer. It is not part and parcel of the final administrative order. And so, therefore, this court cannot review that issue. All it can review is the legality of the administrative order that was issued. And because there were no claims raised against it, and because petitioner conceded in her brief that she was subject to removal, there's no dispute that she is, in fact, subject to removal from the United States. And the U visa issue, again, was raised after the administrative order was issued. And indeed, the U visa regulations with respect to Congress's direction that the agency issue regulations with respect to the U visa, that the deadline expired in July of 2006. The administrative order of removal was issued before that in May. And indeed, the petition for review in this case was issued, was filed with this court before that statutory obligation came into place. So the U visa issues are not properly before this court. They're not part and parcel of the final administrative order removal, and they cannot be reviewed by this court.
Let's go back to the failure to exhaust, because the Tenth Circuit has rejected the government's exhaustion argument in a case under a visa waiver program. Of course, it was a different kind of visa. And this is the Schmidt case versus Maurer. And the Tenth Circuit concluded, as the program provided that removal was to be effected without referral to an immigration judge for a determination of deportability, like here, there was no administrative procedure available to an alien as a matter of right to exhaust. And as a result, the alien's presentation of his petition to the district court sufficed to exhaust remedies. Do you have any comment on that case?
I think that case, we cited the Schmidt case in our brief, Your Honor, to illuminate the point that exhaustion of administrative remedies is a requirement before a case can be brought before the court. And I would submit in the Schmidt case that the self-petition regarding the alien was pending prior to the order of removal. So the agency had notice that issue was before the agency, and therefore that's why the case was heard by the Court of Appeals.
But here, didn't she present her request to the administrative agency even if it was after the final order issued?
She did, Your Honor, but how could the administrative officer be knowledgeable about that U visa claim or any objection to the final administrative order of removal when the final administrative order of removal was issued? It simply wasn't an issue before the deciding officer, and I would think it would not be appropriate to reverse the deciding officer on an issue that was not presented to the deciding officer. And again, we would submit in that regard that this U visa claim is really a claim about admission to the United States.
Isn't this position about, you know, failure to exhaust rather harsh when no regulations specify any administrative procedure for obtaining a U visa?
It's not harsh, Your Honor. It doesn't take a regulation for somebody to object to their removal to the United States or to say that I have some other objection to remove the United States.
Well, her U visa wasn't rejected on the grounds that it hadn't been filed within 10 days, was it?
No, it wasn't, Your Honor. But I was responding to the point, is it harsh to require administrative exhaustion of administrative remedies? That's a hallmark of our judicial review system, that claims must be exhausted before the agency's hailed into court with respect to some error with respect to that claim. And we would submit the petitioners have cited the Sims case in the Supreme Court to say that exhaustion is not required, but Sims is different. Sims is an issue of issue exhaustion, not claim exhaustion. The Supreme Court later in 2004, in a case called Public Citizen, noted that the agency can't be hauled into court until a claim has been exhausted and the issues have been illuminated for the administrative agency. And it's not a harsh requirement for somebody to say, I have an objection. Not so much that say I have an objection with respect to a U visa, but that I have an objection to my removal. Here are my circumstances with respect to the removal, and this is why I dispute it. to give the administrative agency an opportunity to review those issues.
Well, when her U visa was rejected, let's get to the next question. There was no argument that she had failed to exhaust, was there?
There was not an argument at that time. That would be a claim that the government would raise in this court in reaction to any judicial review claim. The ICE officer had already issued the final administrative removal order, so that wasn't before the administrative officer who issued that order to say that the claim wasn't exhausted. CIS, Citizenship and Immigration Services, denied the U visa claim because there was a final order of removal and or she was convicted of an aggravated felony. But we would submit that claim has to go through the APA form, through the district court, in a claim challenging or requesting admission to the United States. And in reaction to the Schmidt case from the 10th Circuit, Your Honor, as we had pointed out in our brief, we have the case from the 8th Circuit, Gonzalez versus Chertoff, which the 8th Circuit recognized in the very exact same circumstances in the expedited removal context, exhaustion of administrative remedies is required. So that's a countering statement from one of the court's sister circuits with respect to the Schmidt case, Your Honor. But again, our final point, we would submit the case should be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction, one, because of the failure to exhaust administrative remedies, and two, the U visa claim is really about admission to the United States, and it doesn't touch and concern the final administrative order here.
Can we get to the merits? If a person with a final order of removal or an aggravated felon can apply for a T visa, isn't that a strong indication that the U visa's internal policy to be contrary is unsound? What reason is there to treat T and U visa applicants differently?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Right? Is there a reason to treat T and U visa applicants differently?
Well, yes, because Congress has made it a point to explicitly state when an aggravated felony conviction makes someone ineligible for a waiver. And when you look at her situation here where she cooperated, there was a certificate presented about this battery that had been committed against her. Isn't that under the trafficking visa, you can have an aggravated felony and you can still get your visa?
Well, we would submit if the petitioner could hurdle all of the
jurisdictional
bars here, Your Honor, and the case could be heard on the merits, I don't think this court could get to that, I guess, if you will, an equal protection claim. I believe there would be a rational distinction between the two. One, the U visa, the aggravated felonies generally don't have the opportunity to apply for relief. And ultimately, the U visa is designed to allow the individual to testify in a case against the perpetrator of the offense. So it would be a temporary reason that the alien would remain in the United States. And I believe the U visa also has a temporal limitation of 4 years. So there might be, with respect to the T visa, a trafficking offense where the alien is a victim of trafficking and would ultimately be allowed to adjust their status in the United States and remain here, I believe, indefinitely, versus the U visa, which has the temporal limitation of 4 years, in order to allow the U visa applicant to testify in this country. That would be a rational distinction. But that, again, that would be assuming that all of the procedural hurdles, jurisdictional hurdles,
could be met here. Both the T and U visa, isn't the point of the visas the same, to protect crime victims and encourage them to aid law enforcement?
But the T visa, Your Honor, I believe the alien has a long-term ability to stay in the country, whereas the U visa has that temporal period to aid law enforcement in allowing the individual to testify against the offender, if you will. The T visa applicant is a victim of trafficking and would be allowed to stay in the country, whereas the U visa purpose here is to really assist law enforcement in working with that alien to provide evidence during the law enforcement proceedings. Now, there is ultimately an opportunity in the government's discretion to adjust the status of a U visa applicant, but in that regard, to take your question further, usually an alien who's trying to adjust their status has to be admissible to the United States. And an alien who has an aggravated felony conviction is not usually admissible to the United States, particularly in the question of a retail theft offense here. That's a crime involving moral turpitude, and that is explicitly an inadmissible offense under our immigration laws.
Of course, currently there are no regs for the U visa.
There are no regs, but that doesn't mean the agency can't exercise its discretion in the absence of a regulation, Your Honor. Again, we would submit, Your Honors, that the case should be dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mack. Mr. Herron, you have 4.5 minutes.
Thank you, Judge.
Your Honors, I want to just briefly touch on some of the exhaustion issues that were raised. First of all, I'd like to point out that Ms. Fonseca Sanchez did raise her U visa claim as soon as that she was able to, and that was before this petition for review was filed. So that makes her case analogous to the Schmidt versus Maurer case that Judge Williams cited. And
can you give us the exact timing of that in terms of the dates?
Certainly. She received the notice of intent to issue a removal order in April. On May 2nd, the FARO was issued. She filed her U visa application on May 11th, that's 9 days later, and she filed her petition for review on May 16th. She received her first denial of the U visa on May 18th. She filed a reply to that denial on June 21st, and she received a subsequent denial on July 28th. And this is what the fact that she received these denials illustrates why the government's exhaustion position is really rather disingenuous. The government did consider Ms. Sanchez's claim, and it rejected it. So it's really just trying to blame the actions of one part of the government on, or put the culpability on another part of the government, similar to how it did in the Fornalik versus Perryman case, where the government said that the Vermont Service Center I don't have the exact facts of Fornalik versus Perryman, but I would urge this court to look at that. And I would urge this court to look at also all of the visa waiver cases, which are analogous to this case factually. Gonzalez versus Chertoff, the government cited, is distinguishable. That was an Eighth Circuit case. First of all, the court did not address the Sims versus Apfel Supreme Court decision. Secondly, the petitioner in that case had never even raised his due process claim up until the petition for review, which is distinct from our case, where Ms. Fonseca Sanchez did raise her U visa claim prior to filing her petition for review. Now, the government has argued, or was arguing, that there's a rational basis for the distinction between the T visa and the U visa, that there's no equal protection claim here. That's simply off point, Your Honors. We're not making an equal protection claim here. We're making a statutory claim. This court need look no further than the statute. The language of the statute is clear. The government suggested that Ms. Fonseca Sanchez was inadmissible because she committed a crime of moral turpitude. Well, the statute creates a waiver for people who have crimes of moral turpitude, who have any crime whatsoever other than Nazism, torture, or committing an act of genocide or extrajudicial killing. So the statute is clear. This court can end its inquiry by looking at the statute. If it needs to look further, I would submit that the government's position is simply irrational, and this court should not be hampered in making a decision by these jurisdictional arguments, which are really just an effort to set up a smokescreen on the government's failure to issue regulations for over almost 7 years. And there's no reason why Ms. Sanchez shouldn't be given the opportunity that other U visa applicants have of being granted deferred action and at least being able to wait into the United States until those regulations are issued and then make her application at that point.
Do you know the status of the regulations? I mean, of the regulations. Do you have any information? I meant to ask the government that.
Well, Judge, some of the memos stated that they were in the clearance process. I believe that as early as, I want to say, 2002, the second memo that it was issued said that the regulations were in the clearance process. So presumably there have been some regulations drafted, but they've been held up for quite some time now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, both Mr. Herron and Mr. Mack. And the case will be taken under advisement.